Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. You're about to meet yet another multi-talented, multi-dimensional creative woman. Actor, dancer, choreographer Christine Bendel has appeared in 7 Broadway shows, among them Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella, for which she was also the assistant choreographer and partnering consultant. Then there was Billy Joel's Movin' Out, for which she was nominated for a Helen Hayes Award, and Twyla Tharp's Come Fly Away. Christine's performed live at Lincoln Center and was featured in 5 Broadway productions with the City Center Encore series. TV projects include Baz Luhrmann's The Get Down and NBC's Smash. In addition to her work on Broadway and in television, Christine's been featured in music videos and film and specializes in the partnering of hustle, West Coast swing, Lindy Hop, and salsa. She's also taught at Broadway Dance Center, Manhattan Dance Machine, American Ballet Theater Summer Intensive, Broadway Bound Kids Workshop, and was asked to choreograph and perform at Dancers for Good, an Actors Fund benefit hosted by Bebe Neuwirth. And last but not least, Christine is also a published author. Her children's book, Noodles Needs a Nap, was inspired by the character she played in Broadway's Cinderella. Christine, welcome and thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Sandy.
So let's start at the beginning. You studied classical ballet, but not really until the age of 12, which is considered late. So how come? And did you always dream of being a ballerina? And did you know you had talent?
You know, it's really funny because I'm adopted. So when I came to my family in Jersey, my legs were underdeveloped. I was a little over a year old. And so I remember being in excruciating pain as a youngster. And when my parents finally figured out by taking me to specialists what was happening, the doctor said, well, you could put her in physical therapy, or which for a two-year-old wouldn't really do very well, or enlist her in an activity where she's forced to be up on her feet running around. So the local dance studio in Emerson, New Jersey, where I grew up, was a great fit. But this studio was more of tap-based studio. It didn't teach any ballet at all. But all the little, it's a small town I grew up, all the young girls went there. I went there. I never thought about being a dancer. My best girlfriend that I grew up with wanted to be a professional dancer, so she left the school.
You were enrolled when you were a toddler?
I was enrolled in a dance school, but it was more like a daycare with music.
No, I understand. Mm-hmm. But that was when you were a toddler.
Yes, I didn't learn ballet then.
Right.
It was a tap-based school. Mm-hmm. So I was learning falat, ball change, or shuffle, step. But because Mary wanted to be a dancer, I was devastated when she left. I didn't get to see her for quite a long time. And I remember when we finally were able to see each other, we had set up a play date where my parents would pick me up from school, bring me to her dance studio. And when I'd have to wait for her class to be done, then we'd go over to her house, have dinner, slumber party, and that was it. And when I saw her dancing, I mean, it had to have been at least a year later because she was in point shoes, she had tights on, her hair was up in a bun, and she was doing fouettés, and I had never seen anything like that before. And I just had that feeling like, I need to learn how to do that.
Because you felt something inside of you, right?
I felt something inside of me. But, you know, life is so funny because I believe that we're all given opportunities to bring us to the path we're meant to be on. So right around that same time, one of my brothers was dating a dancer who was studying at Alvin Ailey. And he brought her to my dance recital.
Tell me how old you were when that was.
I was probably about 10 or 11.
Okay.
Her name was Nisa. And she basically said to my parents, you know, Christine actually has really good musicality, and she kind of stands out. I think you should put her in a real school so she could get real good training. And so I just remember my parents asking me at one point if I wanted to dance, and I said yes. Nisa had recommended them to take me into an evaluation audition for School of American Ballet. So I was brought in to New York City. There was an audition, and basically I remember being put up against the bar, and they wanted to test your flexibility. So they grab your leg, and they yank it in all different directions.
Put it around your neck.
Exactly. And then they look at your feet and everything, and then they do class. Well, I was always very flexible, but I didn't know how to dance or retain choreography. So they basically said, Christine's not even good enough for our beginner class. But put her in some training, and we'd like to see her in a year. So with that information, they went back to Nisa, and Nisa said, oh my gosh, do you realize they don't ask people to come back? So that's when my parents found this school in Ridgewood, New Jersey, and it was Irene Fokine, who is the niece of the great Michael Fokine, one of the founding fathers of classical ballet as we know it. Her training was so intense and good and disciplined that I was caught up. I started my first class at 12. So I didn't know what a plié or tendu was. And basically, she caught me up to my level within a year and a half.
And this is after school dance, right?
I mean, this is after school, right?
You
going.
Went to a regular school, and then
yes,
this was your extra
Monday through Saturdays, mm-hmm. if not one class on Sunday mornings.
Wow.
It was every day after school, every day. They brought me back into audition to School of American Ballet. I was accepted. So I went there for the school season. And then when my level was going to advance the following year, my classes would be during the day, but my parents didn't really have the means to make that happen. You know, I'm one of six children, so it wasn't like they could find the money to put me into professional children's school.
Well, it gets so complicated because it's so yes. consuming.
And my dad was taking, you know, work off every day to bring me into the city, didn't have enough money for a parking lot, so he'd sit in the car for hours until I was done with classes.
Wow.
And then just bring me home. I'd have to eat dinner, do homework, and then start all over again. But the training I got was invaluable. But so at 15, now I'm 15, and I need to find another school. So we looked at Garden State Ballet, and that wasn't the right fit. Then we went and looked at New Jersey Ballet. And my evaluation class, I was immediately asked to become an apprentice of the company and tour with New Jersey Ballet and New York City Ballet to Taiwan, because our artistic director, Edward Villela, had just was leaving to go to Miami City Ballet, and Leonid Kozlov was coming in, who was a principal with New York City Ballet at the time, and he saw me and wanted to bring me on tour. He was doing a tour to Taiwan with certain stars of New York City Ballet and New Jersey Ballet, and so that was the beginning of... Everything happened so fast before we knew it. I had a career in ballet.
And you were a teenager.
I was 15. When I went to Taiwan, and then I stayed with New Jersey Ballet until I was 18, and then left the ballet world.
Okay, we got to go back to this business about you having a, quote, disability.
Yeah, so basically, you know, when something you don't think about, but in an orphanage, their
Where
job—
Where were you in an orphanage?
In South Korea, in Daegu, South Korea.
Do you know who your biological parents are?
No, there was no information. I was abandoned. I was found on the street. I was brought to police, brought to social services.
What year was that?
73.
No kidding. You just—
So there is, we don't know anything about—
Your past.
My past at all. But basically, in an orphanage, the job is to care for the child and just feed and clean them, not to mother them.
Exactly.
And teach them how to stand and teach them how to walk.
Mm-hmm.
So at the age when I should have been using my legs already, I was just being kept in a
So they
crib.
Were atrophying.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So at the crucial stage when babies are supposed to start standing and walking, I wasn't being given that. So when I came to the U.S., to my family, that's hence me having all the problems with my legs. So
that is crazy. Your other five siblings, mm-hmm. are you the only adopted child?
No. So my parents had two sons biologically, mm-hmm. my oldest brothers, and Scott and Keith. And they always wanted a large family, but my mother's body couldn't really handle the natural birthing process. But yeah, so my parents always wanted a large family, and they were willing to adopt. But because they already had two sons of their own, they were constantly being rejected by agencies. And they were open their arms and their hearts to not just American children, but they said, we don't mind where our family mm-hmm. comes from. So they were open to international adoption. So when they started the process, I think it was in the 60s still, mm-hmm. late 60s. And so international adoption was still taboo.
Sure.
And not really done or talked about.
Yes, and it takes forever.
So that's how I ended up coming into the family. And it was obviously a beautiful and perfect fit. And they wanted to continue to expand the family, have the family grow. So 5 years later, Denise was adopted. She's adopted from Seoul, Korea. She's the baby of the family. And then a year and a half after Denise was adopted, Mark and Glenn were adopted. They are older than me. So when they came, they were 10 and 13 years old.
Whoa.
I was only about eight, mm-hmm. seven or eight. They didn't speak any English.
Well, also from South Korea?
They're from Seoul as well. But,
uh-huh.
And like I said, they're brothers from the adoption.
Wow.
So they're the babies of the family, mm-hmm. even though they're older than
right,
me.
Right, because they were the newest additions.
Exactly.
So that's a fascinating story, Christine.
It's kind of incredible. My parents, yeah.
Yes.
Amazing.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Christine Bendel, who is an actor, a dancer, a choreographer, also an author and an illustrator. So you're 15. You come back from touring
overseas, Taiwan.
Mm-hmm. And now what?
So I was an apprentice with New Jersey Ballet Company. So that became my home. And I ended up staying and dancing. The following year, I became a company member. And I was just dancing in their repertoire as a company member of New Jersey Ballet Company.
And this is a full-time job, meaning that
you're
not going to
school.
Not going to regular school.
I was.
Oh,
well, that was
at,
the whole point,
point.
Of going there because I couldn't continue at School of American Ballet.
In the city.
The ballet classes would have conflicted with my academic classes.
Right, right.
So with New Jersey Ballet, I could do my school and then go and take class afterwards. And then whenever there were productions, that's so Broadway, whenever there were any ballets,
uh-huh.
I would take time off from school. And my parents knew that that was my path, so they were able to get me on an accelerated academic program with my high school, and I skipped my junior year of high school so that I could dance because I was just traveling anyway.
Wow.
So I studied extremely hard and worked very hard, and I skipped my junior year to graduate so that I was free for my career.
And so that's basically what you've been doing in all the years since, although variations on a theme.
Yes,
so
exactly.
Was it difficult for you to find work?
I was strictly on the path of being a classical ballerina. Basically, I was with New Jersey Ballet. I was 15, 16, 17. I got asked to go on another tour with Jersey Ballet and New York City Ballet to the USSR, but when it was still the USSR in January of 91. There was some conflict within the ballet company, unfortunately, as people can be very mean and cruel. And so all I know from my perspective is that in the summer there were a lot of layoffs. I came back for my final season, the end of 91, fall of 91. And I just remember the first company class and already the snickering is starting and the attitude. And I'm thinking, oh, gosh, are we starting this already? It's just the first day of the season.
You mean the jealousy and the backbiting?
It was so hard. It's such a struggle. But so after company class, I go to the board to see what ballets are going to be done, who's being cast in what. My name is nowhere on the board. So I go into the office to speak to Carolyn Clark, the executive director of New Jersey Ballet Company, has been running it for so long. And she goes, well, we just don't need you. And basically, I said, well, thank you so much for my time here. And if you need me for Nutcracker, let me know. And I went out to the car and I just broke down and bawled because not only was it just so such a shock, but it was so cruel to not even call me and tell me, just so you know, we don't need you this season. I got up for 10 a.m. company class. And so I was basically humiliated.
And you also had this street cred. You were with them in performing in different
productions. I had been with them for years. And that's how I was treated. I was just so devastated. I thought I was going to quit dancing.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I refuse to put myself in that. It had been a struggle the entire time. I was constantly bullied. And I don't know if it's because just being so young and coming in so new all the time, it's like, I don't know. I mean, like I said, people can be very cruel. So I just felt like that was something I didn't want to put myself into anymore. But I kind of got, I feel a little bit of redemption. She did contact me for Nutcracker. And instead of doing all the featured parts that I was normally had done in the past, I was a parrot and a mouse and core. And I thought, you know what? I found out that I was moving to Orlando. I got hired for Walt Disney World and that I wouldn't be able to finish the run of Nutcracker. But I didn't say anything to her. So basically, we start Nutcracker. And the night before I have to fly to Orlando to move, I found her. And I just said, I would just want to thank you so much for bringing me back for Nutcracker. I'm not going to be able to finish the run as I'm moving to Orlando.
But have a nice day.
Have a nice day, basically. And she just was very calm and quiet. And I left. But the feedback later was that she was screaming and throwing furniture. And I just felt like that was acceptable because of what had been done to me. Mm-hmm, not, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know if she's gonna, ever going to hear this, but I just think that the action to do that to a child, to a 17-year-old, is just, that's not how you run business.
So you left them in the dust and you go to Orlando.
I go to Orlando.
To do what?
I was a world dancer at Epcot Center and I discovered more musical theater dancing and breaking the fourth wall and having more fun and making more money, so much more money, because they didn't even pay me at New Jersey Ballet what I was supposed to get paid. I found that out later, too.
But you didn't have to audition for Disney?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
And did
an
you feel comfortable, you know, moving into a different area
of
dance? Oh, I was dance?
So grateful. Well, I had, you know, been taking class of jazz. I would come into the city and take jazz.
So you were familiar with all the different types of dance.
Yes. I had, this is actually really funny because I had a girlfriend that I had made, you know, one of the few friends I had in the ballet company. Her name was Carrie Anderson. And she lived in the city and we would just, she would invite me in. We'd take class. And I remember one day we were finishing ballet class at Steps and you're coming out of the studio and there's just great music coming from the next room. And there's all these people crowded in the doorway. And I'm trying to see what's going on. And it was a Susie Taylor class. Susie Taylor, who is just such a brilliant lyrical jazz, who studied under Doug Caldwell, who we sadly lost in the dance world. But I just remember not having ever seen dance like that. And I knew that's what I had to learn and do. So I would tell my parents, I'm going to the city to take ballet class. And I was actually starting to take jazz class. And then I discovered Richard Pierlon and Joe Lantieri and Cecilia Marta. And I was just starting to,
spread your wings.
I know that that was going to help me be more rounded as a dancer when I ended up going to Disney and thereafter. So went to Orlando and I realized that that was
And you
what
went
I wanted.
As a teenager.
Yes. So I...
By yourself and they must have housed you there.
No. They set me up for 2 weeks until I found my own housing.
You're
yes.
young. You're
I was
young
very young.
For this. I don't know if I would have felt comfortable if you were my daughter.
Well, you know, the first time I lived away from home, I was 14. I was accepted to the Boston Ballet Summer Program right after I had done my school year at SAB and before I found New Jersey Ballet Company. And so my parents drove me to Boston. And
so you had a lot of this under your belt.
And I was
probably
traveling.
Wise beyond your years.
Yeah, at 15 mm-hmm. U.S. Yeah. and then 17 USSR. I was very yeah. independent very early. Moving to Orlando at 18 wasn't
a big deal.
For me, it wasn't a big deal. Probably was for them, but they were completely supportive of myself and my career.
What was it like to make the transition to Broadway? Now, granted, to be on stage at Lincoln Center or, you know, through mm-hmm. the American Ballet Theater, whatever, is a huge big deal. But Broadway just sort of stands off by itself.
Well, you know, it's so funny, too, because, again, when I was younger, I didn't think about Broadway. I thought it was going to be ballet. But I do remember when I had seen Cats when I was a child, and I thought, oh, my gosh, that's incredible. That would be so amazing to do someday. And kind of left it at that. And then I had made a very close friend when I was in Disney. His name's Carlos. And after... You know, my few years in Orlando, our show closed in summer of 93, but I loved it down there. So I stayed. I got a job at a dinner theater. And then I ended up getting a job on a cruise ship. So I lived on a ship for 8.5 months. And after that was done, I was going to go back to Florida and just live the Florida life, which was a dream for me. But then Carlos says, come on, girl, we got to go to New York. We're going to Broadway. It's time for Broadway. And I said, okay, because we were so close. If he said jump, I'd say how high, you know. So all I know is I'm packing up my stuff to come back up here. Yeah, it was the end of 94. And I immediately got a European tour of West Side Story. And then I went and lived in Berlin for half a year. And then I came back and I just kind of was, you know, playing around with a girlfriend I had made in Germany. And she lived in Delaware. And we would just go back and forth and just enjoy the summer and spend our savings. And then finally, Carlos calls me and says, you need to be in the city. You're moving in with me. He lived in the East Village with his best friend. And I said, okay. So I moved into the city. It was January of 96. And I just started auditioning. I mean, I had gone to a few auditions in the year before I had gone to Germany and after I got back. But for some reason, I didn't take it as seriously until Carlos said, enough playing. Get it here.
Right. Now
Get
it's
here.
Time to really focus on a career.
So in a way, I mean, thanks to him that I'm here, because otherwise I'd probably still be in Florida just living a Florida sunny life, because I was so happy down there.
But you were also driven, though.
I loved dancing, and I always felt
maybe that was the whole point. I've been working so long, maybe I have to kick back for a while, no pun intended.
Well, exactly. The ballet was so difficult that to live in Florida, and it was constantly sunny, and there's palm trees, and on your day off, you could go into the parks as a perk, you know, being a cast member. So I loved it. I just thought it was the complete 180 from my experience in the ballet company. And I was perfectly happy staying down there. But when I came here and started auditioning and realizing, I think I'm pretty good at this. Like, you'd see a room full of people, you do the dance, the choreography, and I feel like I could definitely do this. This is right. So it was just a matter of persistence. When I moved in with Carlos in January 96, I was on stage in June.
Mm-hmm.
I got my first show in
so,
6 months.
So you really didn't have to hustle.
I did hustle, though. I mean, I put in the time and the effort and the tears, the survival jobs.
Do dancers have agents?
Yes, absolutely. My experience with agents has been in and out. In the beginning, I feel like most of my work I had gotten because casting knew me or mm-hmm. a choreographer knew me. But yes, dancers can have agents, absolutely.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Christine Bendel, who happens to be an actor, a dancer, a choreographer, also an illustrator and an author. So was it a relatively easy road to hoe once you came to New York in terms of getting work? I mean, yes, I know there's a lot of ebb and flow. You mm-hmm. work for a while, then you don't. But for the most part, would you say that you seem to be working a decent amount?
In retrospect, I can say that I have been so blessed with the amount of work that has come my way. I tend to remember the good. I have to say, in reality, though, it wasn't necessarily easy because you're constantly going to auditions wondering when you're going to get that next gig or when you're going to get the next show. So that aspect is always challenging. But I was so fortunate to continually get great work. And I really believe it was the ballet training. It gave me something that was completely unique because nowadays everybody's so incredibly well-rounded as dancers. I want to say when I was here, starting, you were either a really good tapper or you're a really great jazz dancer, or you're a really great ballerina.
So you're categorized.
Yes. And so.
And you broke that mold.
Because of my training, I was able to stand out as there weren't a lot of ballerinas on Broadway, I think.
Okay.
20 years ago. Now it's different. Now there's people that are so, like I said, so versatile, so have such great training, can do point, can do contemporary, can do hip hop. But it was different 20 years ago.
Then how did you morph from dancing into choreography?
It's really funny because I never thought that that was something I wanted to do. And people would ask me if I ever wanted to explore that. And I thought, you know, no, I like being the canvas. I like being able to be the one that executes. And basically, you know, it's interesting. My ex-husband is Joshua Burgas, and he won the Emmy Award for choreographing Smash. He's so incredible. He he did On the Town Revival, Gigi. He's got upcoming Charlie and Chocolate Factory, many projects. And in the years we were together, I was always in such awe of his work and his creativity that I could never even consider or entertain in my mind that I would be a choreographer when I saw somebody so driven in choreography.
Did he hire you for a lot of his productions?
Well, of course. I mean, I was...
I like to ask the obvious.
Yeah, in the beginning, I was definitely a muse. We used to get in the studio all the time together. But we were both working on our careers separately. So I was staying in dance focus, and he was aiming to get onto Broadway, and then, you know, life happens and whatnot. But the reason I bring him up is because I wouldn't ever dare consider myself a choreographer or entertain the idea.
You couldn't say his name and yours in the same breath for choreography.
No, it was not something I thought I wanted to do, because when I saw how hard he was working to do it, that wasn't me. Like, it was never my dream, oh, I want to choreograph a Broadway show.
Right.
That was his dream. And so it was interesting that it wasn't until we were apart and me finding myself that I realized, not just as a person, but as an artist, I have so much to say. And so I was asked by, you know, dear friends that I've known for a very long time at Broadway Cares, Equity Fights, AIDS, and encouraged to create for their benefits. And I just remember having so much fear about it all, but I knew with the fear I had to say yes. And then I was so grateful to Josh Rhodes, who choreographed Cinderella, when he asked me to assist him and his husband, Lee, because that was just really eye-opening. I felt like I learned so much. And he actually had asked me if I would choreograph a duet for a benefit in Westport honoring Terrence McNally. And I remember being so scared. I read this email. And at the time when Josh and I were still together, he heard me gasp and asked if everything was okay. And I said, oh, my goodness, I'm being asked to choreograph a duet, and I don't know if I can do that. And he said, Christine, of course you can do that. Why? I said, well, I don't have the experience. I'm not a choreographer. He said, your entire career is your experience. He said, and anybody and everybody in this city who ever wants any partnering work, guess who they call? They call you, myself included. You have all the experience with partnering. You absolutely could choreograph a duet. And so the way he said that, I just realized, oh my goodness, I can. And the worst thing that's going to happen is that might not be the best work I'll ever put out there, but, you know, that getting over that hump,
sure,
enabled me to realize, oh, I do have my own expression.
That is incredibly empowering.
Mm-hmm.
So you're dancing, you're on Broadway, you're in TV, you're in movies, and then something told you to write a book?
Yeah, so it was so funny. In Cinderella, we, in the Princess Giving a Ball scene, we were all peasants. And we came
By the way, I saw Cinderella, so I probably saw you. I took my nieces, whatever, but anyway.
I was the fishmonger with the baskets of fish, and I got the bread crown, and I wore the little red cape, and I had a little dance moment. And but we named ourselves, and I named myself Noodles, because I thought it was funny, double entendre, because being Asian, but also that's how I caught my fish. I noodled them with my bare hands.
Ah, okay.
So everybody loved the name Noodles, and I was even interviewed by Dance Spirit magazine about how does one, in an ensemble, create and develop your own characters when the director primarily works with the principals.
Mm-hmm. How do you stand out, kind of?
Yeah, what do you do to, you know, to develop your own character work? And it was funny because the show had just opened and I was talking to them about Noodles. So I said, well, you know, just you play with what you're given. And people at the theater would call me Noodles. They love the name. And just one day, I was so tired, I could barely keep my eyes open. And I said to one of my fellow actresses out loud, Noodles needs a nap. And when I said Noodles needs a nap, referred to myself in the third person as somebody else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's when I realized Noodles is actually, she's her own separate entity. It's not me playing a character. And I saw her in my head.
In your head. Uh-huh.
That proverbial light bulb literally went off over my head. And I went home. And I drew her. So art was a huge passion of mine when I was younger. Even as I was taking my first ballet classes, I was an artist. I even used to write poetry and everything. I was always journaling my entire life. So I got my old sketch pads and I drew Noodles. Mm-hmm. And a few days later, I drew some more pictures. And then a month later, I was called to jury duty. And I brought my sketch pad and I went into the zone. I came out with 9 illustrations when I thought I had only drawn 3. And just before I knew it, I had all these pictures. And then it told a story. So I wrote this story and
sort of out of your hands in a way. I mean, it wasn't a concentrated act. You were on the receiving end.
I was on the receiving end of
the
muse.
That's so great.
You know, I was so blessed that life brings you people and circumstance to constantly nudge me and get me back on that path.
Well, duh. I mean, go back to square one when you were, you know, when you were first born also. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a fascinating, fascinating story.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that I was found, that I was adopted by the family I was adopted by, could have been another family.
Hello.
That
mm-hmm.
maybe wanted me to be a doctor
mm-hmm.
or what? Maybe I wasn't adopted at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the possibilities are infinite.
Clearly, there was a grand plan for Christine.
I definitely feel that way.
We've run out of time. We could go on for days. I had nothing short of a wonderful experience getting to know you and your story. And
thank you.
What a great conversation. I can't thank you enough for coming.
Thank you so much, Sandy.
No,
I'm so happy to be here.
Really my pleasure. Thank you again, Christine. Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. And please go to our iTunes store page and leave a rating and a review. And if you know anyone you think that we should interview, contact us at sandyclineshow.com.